Welcome to Around the Writer's Table, a podcast focusing on the crossroads of creativity, craft, and conscious living for writers of all ages and backgrounds. Your hosts are Gina, Melody, and Kimbu, three close friends and women of a certain age who bring to the table their eclectic backgrounds and unique perspectives on the trials, tribulations, and the joys of writing. So pull up a chair and get comfortable here around the writer's table.
Hello and welcome back. You're with the around, well, you're at the table with Around the Writer's Table podcast. We are on episode 39, at least according to my very bad math skills. So I hope I'm right about that. We're recording this on April 12th. So we are also down a member. Gina Hogan Edwards is not with us. She is on the road due to some issues that she's had going on. It was unexpected travel. She's fine and she'll be back with our next episode. But Melody and I are holding down the fort. So things are going to be a little bit different today than they normally are. We've got some interesting questions. We're going to be talking about writing about characters and our relationships with the characters that we write about and our trials and tribulations with the characters and the joy of finding out things we never knew about our characters before. I'm sure we're going to just delve into a lot of topics. This is going to be a chatty episode. If you don't know, I am Kimbu York. I am an author and a productivity coach for creatives. I am a former librarian and a former project manager. I write across multiple genres, and I also write nonfiction books for authors, including Become an Unstoppable Storyteller and By the Seat of Your Pants, which is my latest one all about discovery writing, aka pantsing. I also run the 1 Million Words Club, which is a productivity and accountability focused membership group on Discord for writers and other creatives, if you want to join, to help us get the words out and keep us on track with our goals. So that's me. And of course, I have Melody A. Scout here with me. So how are you doing today, Melody? Tell our listeners who you are.
Welcome back, listeners. And thank you, Kimbu. I'm glad to be back and talking about this subject. It was so funny when we decided to pitch in and do a podcast while Gina was out of town and you recommended this subject. I was like, yay, I was just thinking about this. I mean, characters and character development, so fascinating. So I'm excited to start talking about that. My name is Melody A. Scout. I love everything having to do with plants. I am a lifelong gardener. I am a landscape designer. I am a plant spirit medicine practitioner, and I wrote a book called Soul of the Seasons, which can be found most anywhere online, Barnes & Noble, Amazon, independent booksellers. And I'm so excited. It's based on five element healing. I'm so excited about it. We started this podcast based on the five seasons of the writing process. So it has carried us far, never ending list of subjects we can talk about. Right. So I am excited about this subject, Kimbu. Tell me why you thought of this subject to talk about.
I think honestly, and this is going to sound strange, or maybe not. I mean, some of my readers might be like, yeah, that's a thing. Characters are difficult for me. Not because I don't have ideas for characters, but actually making them as complex human representations on the, you know, metaphorical page, because we live in the digital era, but is challenging for me. And It's something I've worked very hard with, and ironically, and I think this is, you know, the And I'm not saying this with sarcasm, but this is a safe space for me to talk about these things, especially female characters. It's been very hard for me to engage with female characters writing them. I love strong female characters. And by strong, I don't necessarily mean they can lift a lot of weights or they're a great warrior or whatever, but that they are strong on the page. They have strong personalities that resonate with readers. And I think part of that is internalized misogyny, honestly, living in a patriarchal society of trying to deal with female characters who are complex and who aren't just there for the male gaze. So I think I've come a long way with that. I started focusing on that with female side characters in my early romances and, you know, just trying to make them as complex and interesting as possible. So it's a challenge for me. Good characterization is a challenge for me. I'm great at world building. I'm great at making up complicated, interesting plots. I'm great at like some comedy and drama and angst. I'm good at fight scenes, but characterization, that's an ongoing fight. So I thought about what would be a specific thing we could talk about that matters to me personally. So I'm sorry I didn't include you in that decision.
Well, luckily enough.
But you did jump on it.
It works for me too.
You jumped on it.
Oh, yeah.
You said you'd been thinking about it recently. So what was that about?
Well, for some of the same reasons you spoke about, and I always love stories and works where the characters are many layered and interesting and keep me on the page. I aspire to write characters that are like that. And a lot of times I know what my characters are going to do most of the time. But sometimes I don't really know them all that well. And, you know, my book, of course, was nonfiction. I've written a lot of nonfiction, but I haven't written as much fiction with the characters being the central focus of the story. So I'm also, you know, I'm working on a historical novel right now set at the turn of the 1900s. And it's taken a lot to research not only what went on during that time period, but what happened with women back then. What was expected of them and what did they do or what were they likely to do in any particular situation. So that's been a real journey. And I'm so excited to talk about this subject.
Well, that does actually segue perfectly into the first question that I thought of when we were talking about this, which is navigating the portrayal and the mindset of values of characters from the past. Characters who have very different lived experiences from you without imposing present day perspectives. You know, like, how do you manage that? And for listeners, I think this is a good question because you can parlay this into in a fantasy world or any type of situation where characters are living in a world that's very different from yours, you know, but specifically for you, it's historical. Like, it's these women really lived in that kind of a world. So how do you keep yourself out of it, I guess? Like, what tactics are you using to try to fight that?
Well, that's a great question. And I have to continually remind myself that this is not me responding from the place I'm at this day and time. This would be people from my grandmother's era. And what freedoms or lack of freedoms were they allowed, even in the languaging? We use certain turns of phrases, and I have to go, what would they have even said it that way back in the day? You know, so it's a continual working with that level to create it. At least it's important to have it authentic to me. And I want this to reflect the reality of what my female characters, because there's going to be a number of strong female characters in my novel, what would have been their response? And I started out with my main character, you know, strong, independent woman. She was not in a strong, independent setting when the book opens. She is completely dependent upon a man to get her where she wants to go. And she has to live in his world by his rules to get, you know, she has her own dreams and aspirations, but she has to live within his world and abide by his rules in order to move herself forward and go where she needs to go. And she surprised me, actually, in a way. It actually had to do with a sex scene. And I just wanted her resisting him because it was a marriage of convenience for both of them. And just, you know, no, I'm not going to succumb to that. Well, that would not have been the reality of that day. You are husband and wife. You are expected to do husband and wife things.
Do your duty.
And so writing it from the perspective of the character who has to make this choice, you know, is she going to go with her personal feelings, or is she going to go with the thing that gets her closer towards her dreams?
And, you know, and today we would use a lot of terms like there's a power imbalance. There's a, you know, a hierarchical dynamic that's negatively influencing the consent issues around that. That is language she would absolutely have. That wouldn't even mean anything to her. Like, that would be like, what? There's a power dynamic? Like, what do you mean?
I can have consent? Yeah. What? Right. Yeah. Right. That's a thing?
Yeah. I think to me, what listening to you, though, it's like, how are you bridging the gap between making that realistic while still making her sympathetic to modern audiences who might be upset with her for not making a choice a modern audience would make? Does that make sense?
It does. And I try to include the internal dialogue. So far, the book is in first person POV. So I'm including some of her internal dialogue that's conflicting. What do I want to do this? Do I have to do this, you know, in order to get what I'm going to get? And I'm realizing the character development over the time span of the novel as well. Where she's, you know, fairly young by today's standards. Back then, she would have been considered an old maid. But she's is developing herself as a person and finding out what her inner strengths are. And, you know, just because this is happening, I choose to do this and I choose to do that. I almost, at first I was going to write it as is something that happened to her instead of something she chose.
That's a big difference too. Yeah.
Yeah. And then I had to really think about, well, she's going to choose to participate in this, something that she finds almost revolting, you know, internally, then it's going to have to be believable why she would do that.
Character motivations is what you're talking about there.
Right? Yes. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
That's a tough one. That's a tough one.
Because we did not have... we have way more choices than even our mothers had during their lifetimes.
That is so true. I mean, I think we've talked about this, and both of our mothers have passed on, so we can talk about them without fear of them hearing what we're going to say. But I think in both situations for our mothers' generations, marriage was... you know, non-optional, really, like, especially for my mother coming from the family she did, very Southern, very upper middle class. Like, it was just, that was the role. That was what she was supposed to do. Negatively, that lack of choice, that assumption that she would have to do this thing no matter what, negatively impacted her mentally for many, many years. And even though she had me and my, you know, my dad, and they had a good relationship when they got, at least when they got married. Yeah, that's tough because it's just it's such a different world than what I live in and you live in right now. It's just like, what? We have a choice? Huh. Yeah. Wild. Yeah.
Right. Even in my mother's generation, that when, you know, the level of choice expanded and grew during her lifetime, I think internally she operated to the end from, you know, the patriarchal, all the men know best, and whatever you do, it's in service to the man. And that was what her choices were based on.
Right. And that messaging is so ingrained that even if you don't like it and even if you hate it, like you're talking about your character making a choice in the sex scene, whether to have sex with this guy that she finds like an unpleasant experience. It's still like it would occur to her to say no because she doesn't want to do it. But then the repercussions of doing it would be so severe or so antithetical to her personal goals that it's not really an option, you know, and that's.
Right. And by her making it a choice, at least she has some say in how it comes down.
Yeah.
Because back in that day, those days, the men didn't have to ask permission.
Oh, they could take what they wanted.
Would have no accountability for, no, it was not considered, I think up into the 60s or 70s, it was not considered rape until if it was the husband doing it with the wife.
I think it was the 70s. Well, I think it was by state, but I think it was the 70s for a lot of places.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, marital rape wasn't
a thing. Not that long ago.
Interesting.
So giving her the ability to be more at choice, even though the choices were bad and horrible, you know? But, you know, I used to, the other part of it was, you know, I'm never heard of the term pantser until I met Kimbu. And you definitely should buy her book and read that.
Thank you.
But that's how I did my fictional story. Total pantser. You know, just let it pop off from my head and didn't dive too deep until after I had looked at it. But with this book, especially being an historical novel, I really had to take time. I had to work through, an outline of storyline and of characters and having conversations with the characters helped a lot as well. What about you? How do you navigate that? I mean, you're working with fantasy, so how does that relate to your character development?
Wow. Okay. That's a good question. I should probably think about it a little bit more. So the two stories I'm working on right now actively are Dragon's Grail and Transmigrated Terry. And they're both about older women in the sense of they're both in their 40s. For Dragon's Grail, that's still pretty young because the characters in that story tend to live several hundred years. So she's still young technically in universe, but she's still older according to what my readers' perceptions will be. And Transmigrated Terry, again, yeah, she's in her 40s. So it's been, I think for Dragon's Grail, it's been less of an issue because of the freedom that I have to create the world from the ground up, which is what I'm doing. And, you know, the restrictions that she has, it's interesting, are very internalized. She was raised in essentially a monastery as a nun and wasn't her choice. She was basically dropped off there when she was 5 years old. And so she's been raised to this life and she hasn't wanted to live this life, but she's been so... She basically built her own cage. Like there wasn't any reason she couldn't leave if she wanted to, but she didn't. She stayed. And I think there's a thing about safety that comes into play there and a sense of belonging that comes into play there for her. For Transmigrated Terry, it's different though, because even though the whole world is made up, the basis of it is that she woke up in was in a car accident. It's a portal fantasy, or isekai for people who know the term. And she was in a car accident and she woke up in a fantasy world. But the thing about this fantasy world is I very carefully based it on all the worst epic fantasy novels written by dude bros in the 80s and the 90s. And that's not to say there weren't some great books written in those eras, but there were some really shady books written in those eras. And this book that she wakes up in, the universe that she wakes up in, is based on the shady type of like just horrible fantasy book series of that era. And if anybody, what's a good... Okay, I'm going to make some enemies here, but the Sword of Shannara series is one that I keep in mind. I do not like that series. I'm sorry if you love it, listeners, but I do not like it. But that's just the tip of the iceberg. There are many that are even worse than that. And in those books, the women are very much male gaze centric, very much side characters that can be fridged at any moment. And in fact, one of the things that she hates about the series is that one of her favorite characters, a tomboyish girl, gets killed off like almost towards the end. Like when you think everybody's going to get out safe, that girl got killed off by the author. And so she's mad about that.
Dang.
Right. And so she's bringing her modern sensibilities into this fake medieval fantasy world. And I'm actually having trouble finding ways to rock the boat because I need to make it so that she doesn't rock the boat too much, that she gets herself killed. But she's willing to try to figure out ways to change the story. So I think in both cases with both Terry and Astra, I'm in talking to you about it, I'm kind of realizing that I probably need to actually put more restraints on the world around them to make their character development make more sense. Yeah. I think I'm going to have to do that now that we're talking about it. Insight. Bitch.
Yeah, because that, you know, it shifts a lot of things when you decide you need to do a certain thing with a character. Do you have conversations with your characters?
Actually, no. I thought that was very interesting that when you were talking about it, like I do not have conversations with my characters, because for me, and I know there are other writers who do this, for me, it's more of a movie in my mind. I'm kind of a passenger. Mm-hmm. I'm not engaging with the characters directly. And so it's, for me, it's like, well, what's the next scene? What's the next thing that happens? Because I am definitely a pantser. So no, I don't have, but I do know a lot of authors who do you have conversations with the characters? I know Gina does. I know Gina does.
I'm trying to think if I did. I tell you a powerful experience I had with my main character. I did, at one of Gina's retreats, I did the Where I'm From exercise.
Oh, yeah. That's such a great exercise. Describe it for us so if our listeners don't know what it is.
If I remember correctly how this goes.
Gina's not listening, so she can't.
Yeah. Yeah. She can correct us later. But basically, you have this scenario you write about yourself or a person or a
character.
And you tell this story about where I'm from that goes back into the history of who makes them and why they are the way they are. And I
kind
did
of
it
free association writing, really, I think.
Yeah.
Exercise.
Yeah.
It's like you're not, it can be a poem, it can be just a scene, but it's meant to just like touch into the core. I'm trying to remember it as well. So.
Yeah. And it really did. It was like one of the lines, just free associating writing for maybe 15, 20 minutes. And one of the lines that came up about my main character is like, I am the tears of 10,000 women.
Ooh, Melody, I got chills.
I know. It's like that when I read it back, it made me cry.
Wow.
You know, and you know, there was this thing about the oppression of, you know, generations of men, and like, holy crap, there is all of this richness.
Wow.
So that was my it wasn't an actual conversation, but it was so powerful. Don't we have that exercise in our show notes someplace?
You know what? I'm sure we've talked about it before, and I know Gina has the exercise somewhere on her site. So yes, listeners, when we get the show notes together and we put all this together, check the show notes. I'll have a link to take you to how to do the exercise, because this is one Gina does regularly, and I know she got the idea from somebody. Anyway,
yes. Yeah.
We'll link you to it because it's worth doing. I've never done it for a character, so now I'm going to go find it and do it. I think maybe for Astra, because the Dragon's Grail character, because I think that might be helpful for me, even though I'm not in conversation with her, but kind of, this is going to sound a little woo-woo, but like channeling her, like,
you know, yeah, exactly.
Into her vibe.
Absolutely. And, you know, the having the conversation, how I would do that is to get into a quieter meditative state, go in with a specific question. And yes, I have done this before. Yep. is ask them something specific and see what they have. You know, often when I'm imagining, this is part of my pantsing routine, is I'm like in a room with that character.
Ooh.
And I am the observer of everything going on in that room. And when I write, I'm reporting what's happening, what it looks like, what I feel when I'm in that room. So that helps me with my character development, because then I get to see not only what they say to me directly, what's their posturing, you know, what are they exuding, just their presence. What's it like to be around them?
Yeah, that's interesting. So definitely we'll have information about how to do the where I'm from exercise and kind of keep in mind some of the things Melody has said, because that sounds like it could be really useful.
But the other thing I really love doing is when I get together with my writer friends and I talk about my characters,
and they ask me
really good. I know we're talking, you know, like if somebody else overhears them. I remember when I was younger, and my mom and I and my daughter, I think, would all watch The Young and the Restless. And then we would talk about their characters. And do you know what Victor did? And this is what happened to Nikki. And my father would come in the room and he'd be listening and listening. He goes, who are you talking about? And then he goes, oh, it's that damn story again.
Oh, yeah.
But he'd be interested. But having that conversation.
Yeah,
it is. Boy, I can talk forever about
my right character. Same here. I know several times I've gone to, you know, Gina about a characterization that I'm working on or something like that. Just so it's like, well, I don't understand the motivation. Then we talk about our characters. You know, you're a writer when talking about made up invisible people is oftentimes more exciting than anything else going on in your life.
Exactly. Absolutely. I have a question for you.
Oh, no. Okay. That's fair. That's fair.
I want to know if a character has ever broken your heart.
You know what? I'm going to have to say that I write some heavy angst, but I tend to lean into happily ever after stories. So that's why I write romance. I don't write grimdark fantasies. So the answer's no, ironically. I think there have been times when I'm writing characters where I'm heartbroken. But I usually, part of my job is to fix that. That's one of the things. So this is interesting because there are a lot of authors who enjoy writing the trauma of the characters. They enjoy writing the character going into the trauma, going through the trauma, and then coming out the trauma. And for me, the most interesting part is not the trauma, but the post-trauma. So a lot of times what I'm writing about in my book, The Protector, which is a romance novel, kind of a thriller romance novel, really, a romantic thriller, I don't know. The main character is he's a widower, and he's deep in grief, even though it's been years since his partner died, and he's very much still in the grief cycle. And he has to pull out of it because of, you know, plot reasons, the best reasons. And he meets his next mate. And so he's has all these reasons to not be locked in a closet crying. But his character was very, very heartbreaking to write. And I think that really comes through when I've reread it recently. And I was like, wow, I just put this guy through the ringer. It was tough to write that. But in the end, what interested me was not that he had been put through the ringer or that he had a tragic backstory, but how he progressed into a new stage of his life. So I don't purposely go in to break my characters as much as I go in to break them or deal with the brokenness and put it back together. Because is that projection? Because I've been through some pretty traumatic circumstances and I want to know how to be put back together. Maybe, possibly a lot, but that's the interesting part for me. That's the interesting part for me. It's not the trauma. It's what happens after the trauma. And so that's my answer.
Well, that's made me think as well. And I think I have probably very similar, although I can really get into the trauma. I can write some trauma.
That's a talent. I'm not saying that that's a bad thing for authors to do. It's just I'm not interested in doing it. I've read some great works where people just put their characters into hell and then drag them back out. So it's a talent. Yeah. It's a talent. I admire that.
So, and then it becomes the challenge for me, but in a good way, is, all right, well, how's she going to navigate her way out of this now? How is she going to respond to this challenge, this trauma, this thing that she needs to overcome to move her towards her final destination? And it's a good thing that happens. It's all sometimes surprising. Sometimes it's good to remember. For me, in my book, I talk about the five seasons, and there's five emotional states of anger, joy, gratitude, sympathy, grief, and death. You know, loss, fear is in there as well. And in my book, there's lists of balanced and unbalanced way that people respond to each of the core emotions. And that's really helpful sometimes in, well, how would this character respond? If she was really filled with rage, what might be some of those responses or is rage the response this character needs to have in this situation? So that's been a real good reference guide for me.
Interesting. There's a book out there called The Emotional Thesaurus, and I don't use it enough because it really talks about what it does is it relates emotions to other emotions. So if you're thinking of rage, it can talk about all the different things rage can be related to, including fear and grief and all these other things. So, and that's kind of what you're talking about, because how somebody reacts is really going to bend a lot on not just the external circumstances, but everything that their emotional landscape, like where they're at in their lives. Cause it's, you and I, we're women of a certain age. It says so in the intro to our podcast. Our reactions now, for me in my 50s, you a little bit more so, way different than they were in my teens or my 20s or even my 30s. Like,
absolutely.
Very, very different reactions to a lot of things, even though I still feel things a lot, but not the same person.
And that's part of, since this is my novel is going to be over an extended period of time, then I need to reflect that in my character's
growth. Is she when it starts? How old are you making her at the start of the story?
She's probably in her early 20s.
I see what you mean. Like she should have already been married and, you know, settled in with some kids by now, right?
Yeah.
But she's from a traditional culture. Like she's from an old world type of.
Yeah, they were Germans. They lived in Prussia. Lutheran would have been probably their likely religion, you know, stoic, quiet, serious.
Obedient.
And she feels like she's like an alien because she is not, and her past reflects that she is not of that. So she has that inner conflict about trying to fit into that world, but yet not really fitting into
that
world.
You know, that's going to resonate so well with modern audiences, because even though the the specifics are different, there are so many situations where people are feeling like they're not included, whether that's because they have, you know, neurodivergent, or they're queer, or they, you know, their family is religious and they're not, or their family's not religious and they are, or they're the first one to go to college. There's a lot of that in society, even if the circumstances are different. I could see how that would relate really well.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Well, actually, can you believe it? We've already talked for 35 minutes. We're like, I'm watching the clock on it, right? It's like, oh, we did a whole podcast. What?
I could talk about this a lot longer. Characters are so fascinating.
We might have to do a couple of offside episodes just to keep talking about stuff like this, which I would enjoy a lot. Our next episode, though, Gina, will be back. We'll be back on the creativity quest and talking about that cycle and how the seasons of writing work with that cycle, which is something longtime listeners know we've been working our way through. We went through the five seasons with Soul of the Seasons with your book, and then we jumped into the creativity quest. And later this summer, we'll be starting some new stuff. So it's something to look forward to, because we're going to keep exploring and keep talking, which is something I love doing. It's been so much fun. So much fun.
Absolutely.
But anyway, thank you, readers. Like we mentioned earlier, we will have some resources in the show notes. The Where I'm From exercise and a couple other resources I know that we talked about. So check the show notes, check our website. At our website, you can leave a comment for us. We'd love to hear your questions or your thoughts. If you are listening to us on any of the major distribution sites like Spotify or Apple Podcasts, we are on YouTube. Please leave a comment, give us a like, a thumbs up, a heart, whatever the heck they're doing these days, and help us get the word out to other people so that they can enjoy listening to our podcast as much as we were recording that. We enjoy recording them. So anyway, thank you so much for joining us. This has been Kimbu, and I am signing off.
Bye, everyone.
Thanks for joining us around the writer's table. Please feel free to suggest a topic or a guest by emailing info@aroundthewriterstable.com. Music provided with gracious permission by Langtree. A link to their music is on our homepage at aroundthewriterstable.com. Everyone here around the writer's table wishes you joy in your writing and everyday grace in your living. Take care until next time.